Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 77 of season 11 of Movie Roman, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning series Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off his three-episode arc is Travis Bowe, both of Minute of Thieves and Real Comic Heroes. Welcome back once again, Travis.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, you've been behaving yourself, so figure it out.
Yeah. Well, that ends now.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, you will not be invited back tomorrow.
Fine.
Fine, if you want to be that way.
Right.
Exactly. All right, so episode 77 begins with Doc continuing to try and treat Smokey and ends with Buck and Garnier getting comfy in a foxhole. So we ended things yesterday after Smokey had been hit, and basically Doc is trying to treat him, trying to get an IV in so he can give him some plasma. Lipton's helping him. And Lipton doesn't notice that he's actually stepping on Smokey's hand. And, at this point, I guess it's a little cruel to say it this way, but, the response is, look, I'll get you another Purple Heart for it.
Yeah. Nice little callback there to like what you mentioned the other day.
Yeah.
He's kind of collecting these purple hearts. And,
yeah, and now he's getting one.
Yeah. But I do like that the story about him collecting these purple hearts, and then he gave one to someone named Talbert.
Yes.
Because he had gotten injured by friendly fire.
No, he gets stabbed by Smith.
Well, but I mean friendly fire as in right. By your own, teammate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it's I guess it has a lot to do also with the camaraderie that that these guys all have. It fits. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And then Lipton runs off to go try and get a try and stop the Jeep that's going by there. And he screams out, Hey, give us a hand. And he comes back and goes, I got you a ride, Doc.
I really like how this is edited. Because it goes from him saying, I got you a ride, to we're like speeding away. The Jeep goes like, I think, over the camera, speeding off towards the this church that we've been in before. And then it cuts to, again, we see the Jeep like pass by the camera, but we see this pile of bodies next to the fence. And then we see them unloading Smokey from the Jeep. So it's just really nice editing.
Yeah. No, it's definitely nice editing the way that they do that here. And and again, we're back once again in the same place we just were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
this entire, part six jumps between being in the forest in foxholes to being in town with, With dead bodies and wounded men and nurses.
Yep.
And civilians just standing around. Then we get a shot of the Jeep getting closer. And this is, I think, what you were talking about yesterday, where you just see the pile of bodies just on the side there. And you can even see that some of those bodies are not full bodies.
Right.
Again, gruesome, but very realistic. To show us what's really, really happening here. And, I like the way that they show that.
Mm-hmm.
Doc tries to help get him off of the, get Smokey off of the Jeep. And they lift him up and they start carrying him into the, into the church. And someone screams out, Jones!
I like that he's put him here. I like that they incorporate the front of the hood of the Jeep is kind of where Smokey's body is instead of you would think like they've got like a cargo area on the back of the Jeep, almost like a pickup truck. It's like you'd think maybe it would be Heat Smokey would be back there, but I like that they use the front of the Jeep for.
Well, I think anyone who's seen MASH knows that that's what you do, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, when Tierney's on, I'll have to try and remember to ask her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it seems to me as if it's standard. This guy Jones doing some kind of triage. And he runs over to go take a look and at what's going on. He goes, "All right, put him here." And he goes, "Where's his tag?" And he goes, "Where's his tag? What's wrong with him?"
Now, was he referring to his dog tags, or what should there have been a tag applied
I
to him?
believe that what he's referring to is that you can add a tag onto. You're supposed to like have some sort of tag on the wounded soldier saying what happened to him.
Huh.
I'm pretty sure
Interesting. So,
that's what it is that they're talking about here.
yeah, I can't imagine being again being in, the medic trying to patch these people up best that they can to get them, the better sort of care. And in that time, they're supposed to write down what's going on and then pin that to him. I mean, it makes sense. Like, yeah, as the guy who's now receiving this person, yeah, you would want to know, like, where did he get hit? What's he got? But yeah, I can't imagine he gets a lot of tags on these guys.
Well, again, it depends on how they're doing the triage. I can sort of understand that I can see that there are cases where they're going to have a tag and where the cases where they're not going to have a tag. But then again, also maybe he's looking at it from the perspective that okay, he was injured in the field and you've already taken the time. Even if it just takes 5 minutes to drive, you have enough time to mark it down because they're dealing with so many wounded people.
Yeah.
We need to try and figure out what's going on. I'm assuming it's not like they need to upload it to some sort of database so that they can print it out
Sure.
and stuff like that.
Yeah, check it. What's does my chart say?
Exactly. My assumption is that, but again, the whole reason that they're doing this part of the scene is for us to actually know now that, Doc is saying that, okay, well, he's been paralyzed. And he goes, "What?" He goes, "He's paralyzed. Can't feel a thing." And the reaction of Jones is pretty strange because it makes it seem, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it makes it seem as if he's basically saying, "Well, why are you gonna try and save a guy who's paralyzed?"
Right. I'm sure,
That
yeah, I'm sure that was the attitude with a lot of these, cases. I was shocked. I mean, not, I don't know how you treat spoilers, but like in the future, or maybe in this at the end of this battle, some people lose some limbs, and it's like you'd
maybe
think.
that's part seven. It's in the next
Okay,
part.
so yeah, I just it's incredible that they survive,
Again, that's the type of injuries that people got with these type of things.
Yeah.
Then Doc Rose starts walking around, and once again he bumps into Father Maloney, who we've encountered numerous times so far, and he is Father David Mowry's hero. We talked about him back ooh, wow, that was back in part three when Father David.
Okay.
So yeah, it's been 47 episodes or something like that since we talked about that, so, or maybe a little less, but yeah, so it's been 2 months. And we hear Father Maloney say, "In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen." And he's performing last rites, obviously, on one of the wounded men that he's probably not going to make it. And he even kisses him on the on the forehead. And Doc
Yeah.
is taking this all in. And I love how you can see, we see Doc in the in the foreground, and you can see in the background Renee.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think it's a great way to show the whole thing.
Oh,
Yeah, because
sure.
again, we're gonna bring them back together and talk, have the two of them together. Continuing
Well, it's
their
also,
connection and their conversations.
yeah, it's nice that she like steps out of that room to get closer to him and just basically steps out of light, you know. And I mean, you could take the symbology even further. I mean, there's a, you know, book that I think was featured about her, or story, you know, someone wrote something about her, like the angel of
Yes.
Bastogne, or you know, something like that. So, you know, totally appropriate to frame her like that, you know, in this episode. So
I assume that that's that makes sense also. That they did it that way. I mean, one of the things that Bruce McKenna mentioned is the fact that there are things that he wrote on paper that the director, his name is David Leland, didn't agree with and changed things. And Bruce said in the end, when he saw the final shot, he was like, "Wow, that was the right decision." So yeah, and then Renee comes over to the doc. And she calls out to him and goes, "Eugene, Eugene." And then Jones calls her over and goes, "Renee." She goes, "Are you?" And he goes, "Renee, I need some help here." She goes, "Are you all right, Renee?" So again, someone is trying to get in between this romantic moment between
Yeah.
I think Jones is a little jealous. That's what it comes
Yeah.
down to, because he's cloning her from all the way across the room. It's
Yeah.
not like he's even right there. Yeah, so I like the way that they don't really even have to say anything between Renee and Doc. The two of them basically have an unwritten language between the two of them, or an unspoken
Right.
language. Where they're.
I was looking at Shane Taylor's Wikipedia, and it's not super detailed. I mean, it just kind of talks about, like, even just one paragraph of it is basically just about this role and mostly this episode. Since this was kind of his big feature episode. But it talked about, yeah, it says Roe is nevertheless the protagonist of the sixth episode, Bastogne, which follows his struggles to help the men as they endure frigid conditions, low supplies, and constant enemy fire. Taylor's performance was praised as a marvel of economy by Emily St. James of the AV Club, who wrote, "Watch how little he moves or speaks unless he absolutely needs to. He's exactly the right man for this part, and the way that Roe's long slog through the siege begins to feel like an unending nightmare." So I just like how they point out, you know, how he's not overacting, he's not doing a whole lot, but what he is doing, you know, is makes an impact.
I've been trying to get in touch with Shane. Hopefully by the time this comes out, I will have already gotten a response from him, and that he is interested in joining me. So far I've spoken to a number of the actors, and as of recording, only one of them has done an interview with me, but a few of the others are still debating it, including the actor who plays Smokey. So it is possible
Oh,
that
nice.
by the time this episode airs, he asked me to send him a few episodes for him to listen to, but he told me he's right now in the middle of an acting job and he's a little busy. and he'll hopefully get to it. So, you know, there is hope that Ben Kaplan will have a talk with me. You know, it'll
very
be
cool.
Very interesting to hear his thoughts on both, you know, the Purple Heart scene and his injury scene. You know, that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward. So Ben, if you do hear this and you still haven't agreed yet, please please agree.
Come on, Ben, we need you.
Exactly. And then the shot changes and we're back with the men in the field, and we see Malarkey standing by a big pot that has something in it, and he's given a ladle full of something. And
when he pours the ladle from, you know, from the ladle to one of the cups, it looks like, to me, like a pretty traditional beef stew. Like, it looks like it's got chunks of, you know, potato, carrots, peas, you know, just your standard sort of veggies. So it doesn't look terrible.
No, I wouldn't call it.
But then, yeah.
Yeah, and then Babe shows up, and Babe actually has two tins to fill up. And he goes, one for the doc. He goes, sure. And we see, Lipton's just watching what's going on. And then Babe goes over where Doc is once again, all by himself, leaning against a tree. Trying to, trying to take in everything that he has had to do at this point. And Babe just gives him the thing and walks away.
Yeah,
and then we see that the guys are all watching him.
It's a lot of long contemplative shots in this this little the rest of this section, really. And I don't think Doc has any more dialogue, does he?
I'm not sure. I don't think he does.
Yeah. But again, he's still just, acting the hell out of it.
Oh, for sure. There's no question about
it. And yeah, I like that we see Winters notice Doc,
yes.
And the rest of kind of this scene, he's, occasionally looking back over at Doc and just kind of like keeping an eye on him,
That's right. That's true. And then a Jeep shows up, and we see that it's Colonel Sink showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm a big fan of when Dale Dye shows up in these movies and these shows. I like Dale Dye. He's kind of he's just kind of a comforting, that guy for military,
right? I agree.
Stuff. He's a nicer seeming, like Arlie Ermey. Arlie Ermey was like gruff and rough edges. Dale Dye seems, a little more pleasant.
Okay, I don't know if the guys when they went through the boot camp felt that way, but maybe afterwards.
Probably not. No. Yeah, I read that he would fire blanks, in the middle of the night to kind of keep people awake. That sort of thing. So
again, I for anyone who might have missed it, back at the end of episode of part one, I had an interview with Freddie Joe Farnsworth, who's one of Dale Dye's top guys, telling us all about the stuff that the
warrior
that the actors went through, during their boot camp and stuff like that. So it's just very cool. And so Colonel Sink goes, Benton Sink down to a Christmas Eve dinner of turkey and hooch back at the Division CP. Damn if I don't like old Joe Dominguez's rancid ass beans better. Then he goes, hello, Easy Company. Hello, sir. Hello, sir. He goes, General McAuliffe sent a message to the entire division. I thought maybe you people would like to hear it. Oh, that should be your prerogative, sir. All right, men. General McAuliffe wishes you all a Merry Christmas. What's merry about all this, you ask? Just this. We've stopped cold. Everything that's been thrown at us from the northeast, south, and west. Now, 2 days ago, the German commander demanded our honorable surrender to save the U.S. Encircled troops from total annihilation. The German commander received the following reply. To the German commander, nuts. And everyone laughs. We're giving our country and our loved ones at home a worthy Christmas present. And being privileged to take part in this gallant feast of arms, we're truly making for ourselves a Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you all, and God bless you. And one of the guys screams out, nuts, sir! Everyone goes, nuts! And they all start laughing. So, it's as you said, it's always great when Dale Dye shows up in these parts. I mean, in Saving Private Ryan, he plays a little bit of a weasel, but still, he's fine, I guess you could say there. My favorite role of his has to be in Platoon, though.
Okay.
When he orders that they that they target their position, and his line is, "It's been a lovely fucking war." And so but I like what he does here as Sink also. He has a feel of authority around him.
Totally.
And
I like this, like, this, I keep wanting to say minute,
you can say minute, this segment.
This segment, it does such a good job of showing us, like, he steps out of this Jeep, Sink does, and comes over to the men, and comes up to Die, or to Winters, with the, he's about to read off the this letter, but it's like a perfect shot of those two standing next to each other, and you just see how different they look. Dick Winters, he looks, his face is like sunken in, he's cold, you could tell that he's just physically, he's crossing his arms, he's holding him, trying to keep his warmth in, And then you have Sink, who has a helmet with no scuffs on it. The spade on the helmet is still bright white. The coat that he's wearing is, you can see that it's got like a fur-lined hood, And these guys are just, they have no winter gear. I also love that in between these two men, you can see Nixon kind of standing off a little bit to, behind them. And he looks like he's ready to pounce on Sink just to, tear the coat off of him to, keep warm. And it's just, I love that juxtaposition of like the guy who's leading the men looks, bright and shiny. And not to say that he hasn't been like, he's put in his time, I'm guessing. I haven't looked into, Robert Sink's like full, entire history to see what he's been through, but I'm guessing he's been where these men are, but it's interesting to just see it here, them side by side, but like, they are not fighting the same fight,
Nope. Definitely not. But again, it what do they say? Shit is downhill.
Right. Yeah. complaints go up.
Exactly. Yeah. Guess. But it makes sense that the colonel would have the best winter gear.
Yeah. Yeah. Since I mentioned the spade on the helmet, have you talked about any of those markings?
Nope.
Or like the Easy Company
nope,
have?
Okay. I haven't mentioned it. What?
The so the spade represents where did it go? Spade is a D-Day identification symbol for the 506th Paratrooper Infantry Regiment, and it means good luck and the death card to the enemy.
Oh wow, interesting. Okay,
and then so you. It's hard to tell with like Winters, like when you see the two of them kind of standing side by side, but any of the men underneath Sink they all have spades that have a little white dash mark underneath the spade, whereas Sink's dash mark is above the spade, and that's just to signify like Sink's is above the spade to indicate that he's command. And then if the dash mark were to the right of the spade, that would indicate 1st Battalion. If it's below, it would be 2nd Battalion, which these guys all are. And then to the left, it would have been 3rd Battalion. Wow.
That's interesting. I never thought about that.
And then Sink also has a big vertical stripe, white stripe on the back of his helmet, and that just indicates that he's an officer.
Right, which they have in the back for the reason that you don't want the enemy to be able to see, oh, there's an officer.
Right.
For him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's but no.
He does also, like,
and we saw this in Saving Private Ryan also, the idea is that when you're running behind the commander, then you know that that's one of the officers that's in front of you because of the white stripe.
Yeah. I know in the front of his helmet, he does have, like, it's got like a metal. I think his has an eagle on it, whereas
colonel.
Most
that's his colonel symbol.
Yeah. And then some of the other men have like various. What's his name? I can't remember his name. I think he's like the next in charge. Underneath
Major Horton. No,
I might be. Yeah, I think so.
Major Horton was
the one who's like really ineffectual.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. But
yeah, he's got something on the front of his helmet as well that's, you know, indicates something. I'm sure. And then Winters has what?
It's his rank.
Yeah.
Right, sorry, that's Major Strayer, Robert Strayer.
Strayer. Okay. Major Strayer.
Right. Horton is the guy that we never get to see, who we find out gets killed at some point. Yeah.
Mm, right.
But yeah, so. I like this scene. I like it's nice and effective that you know, he's there to give them a little bit of morale, right? Mm-hmm. You know, on Christmas for these guys that are in the middle of this really deadly battle.
Yeah,
and he's, you know, I do like the you know, the little anecdote about the, you know, about that the Germans wanted them to surrender.
Yeah.
You know, it says a lot about Easy Company with that.
Right.
All right, not just Easy Company. It's about the whole 501st. You know.
But, sure.
I mean, one of the things they don't mention here, but they mention it in the book, is, you know, the end result of that battle that we had that, you know, that Gordon got injured with. So it says the German attack continued and intensified, was finally thrown back with heavy losses thanks to a combination of Easy's rifle and machine gun fire, mortars and grenades, ably assisted by artillery. Lipton later counted 38 dead German bodies in the front of the woods. Lieutenant Welsh was hit and evacuated. On the afternoon of Christmas Eve, the men received General McAuliffe's Christmas greetings. "What's merry about all this, you ask?" was the opening line. "Just this. We've stopped cold everything that has been thrown at us from the north, south, east, and west. We have identifications from 4 German panzer divisions, 2 German infantry divisions, and 1 German parachute division. The Germans surround us. Their radios blare our doom. Their commander demanded our surrender in the following impudent arrogance." There followed the 4-paragraph message to the U.S. commander of the encircled town of Bastogne from the German commander, demanding an honorable surrender to save the encircled U.S. troops from total annihilation, dated December 22nd. McAuliffe's message continued. The German commander received the following reply, 22nd of November 1944. "The German commander, nuts. The American commander. We are giving our country and our loved ones and holding a worthy Christmas present and being privileged to take part in this gallant feat of arms are truly making for ourselves a Merry Christmas." So it's pretty pretty much word for word. And then it says, "The men at the front were not as upbeat as General McAuliffe. They had cold baked beans for their Christmas Eve dinner, while the division staff had turkey dinner served on a table with a tablecloth, a small Christmas tree, knives, forks, and plates." So again, the rank has its privileges.
Yeah. I read somewhere that the Germans kind of needed help, like understanding what nuts meant. And the best translation they were given was go to
Yeah, more or less.
hell. Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's the sentiment. Yeah, just the.
Makes perfect sense for that. And then the shot changes, and we're back in the foxhole with Garnier and Lipton and Buck. Sorry, we're back in the foxhole with Garnier and Buck, and you can hear music in the background or singing in the background. Do you have any idea what song is being sung?
I know I could place it when I was listening or watching the minute, but I feel like at a different scene they might also do a different song. So I can't remember what song
Okay,
this
so
one
it's
is.
the German version of Silent Night.
Okay. I feel like, is there another scene where we hear them singing Christmas
I don't
music?
remember.
Okay. Maybe it's only this one and I'm just picturing
Right.
something
I mean,
else, but yeah,
right. Have you
that rings
ever
a bell.
seen the movie A Midnight Clear?
No.
Okay, so that's like with Ethan Hawke and Kevin Dillon, a whole bunch of. Actually, I think Gary Sinise is in it. I
Okay.
think it came out in 92.
Okay.
And again, it's about this squad of six men
Okay.
during the Battle of the Bulge, and they decide to make peace with the Germans that are nearby.
Yeah.
And it starts by the Germans singing Christmas songs. And again, it's always ironic, the idea that here you have opposing forces. That share the same or similar religions
Right.
and have the same I guess religious backgrounds,
Sure.
and they have the same songs with just different words because of the language.
Yeah.
But it always amazes me from that perspective. Because then you think about it, okay, you have like a chaplain or something like that, and is So, a chaplain is on one side of the war, but the other side also believes that the chaplain is the person who should be dealing with them and stuff. Things like that. It's
Yeah.
very, very strange.
Yeah, it's weird. And I've heard of, I feel like more in World War One media that I've seen that there were like, ceasefires and truces and things like that, and even instances where both sides shared, like they came out of the either came up from the trenches and met on the battlefield and just kind of exchanged, drinks or little trinkets, but then went back to war like the next, it's like
Exactly.
how do you go from, trying to kill each other to, patting each other on the back and then back to trying to kill each other.
Don't know. And we first get a shot of Doc Rowe in his in his soul
Yeah.
He's like in a cocoon, it looks like.
Looks like, yeah,
And
I worry that he's going to freeze to death,
then we see Winters just walking the line, and he sees Doc Rowe there, but just crouches down and takes a look at him, and looks at the fact that Doc Rowe is peacefully asleep at this point. And then Winters looks over at the CGI trees that you talked about
Yeah.
earlier, and you can tell it's the exact same
They
set of trees.
may have moved one or two of them around slightly, or
Maybe. Right, but Winters is looking for something going on. Is something going to break the break the silence of everything of the night so far. Which
Wasn't
again
that?
goes with the song Silent Night.
Yeah, because that's where because he's hearing them singing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And then we're in the foxhole with both Buck and Garnier. And we can see that Buck is holding a picture. And you got to give it to the production guys. You definitely can see that's
Oh yeah.
Neil McConnell.
Yeah.
No question about that in the picture. And he has a baseball hat on because a baseball cap on because Buck was known as he was an All-American catcher.
Oh, okay.
For I think UCLA, if I remember correctly. But it's great. And then he says, "Bill, huh? There's a picture of my girl. Good looking broad,
Yeah.
Buck." And then Buck goes, she's finished with me. So, you know, he's basically telling him that he apparently got a Dear John letter type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's the way it makes it sound. Because if she's
Right.
finished with him, as opposed to him saying, "I'm finished with her."
Right.
You know, that type of thing. And
Yeah.
then he gives the picture to Garnier. As if,
Like,
okay, you can deal with this. I don't
right.
Want to deal with this. And
Yes.
then Buck puts his head back and closes his eyes. And that's how this 5 minute segment ends. So is there anything else you want to say about this segment or about the entire series?
I did catch one of my in my Dale Dye notes. You may have already mentioned. He was made an honorary member of the 506th Airborne. For his, I guess, for you know, probably for this portrayal of Sync, but I'm sure he's done other roles and work, you know, in and around this same you know, time
Right.
period
Yeah.
and battle
Probably
and.
not as impactful.
Right. But no, it was a good chunk of minutes and yeah, I'm glad that I had a reason to go back and watch the series and I'm looking forward to starting the book. So
Very
yeah.
cool. I think you'll enjoy the book. It's
Yeah.
it's very good. Yeah. They even made a mini series out of it. It's that good.
Okay. Right on.
Exactly. All right. So today's segment is Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top five movie brothers. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
This is my number five. Since it's pretty fresh in my memory, I think it came out last year. Sinners, really good movie about brothers. And then I thought about, I mean, next one, number four, is the Ten Commandments. So I really like how,
Yeah.
you know, Ramesses and Moses start out as brothers and, you know, and then kind of in that same vein, you've got, you know, hero villain sort of thing, Thor, like, even though I think Thor Ragnarok is my preferred Thor movie, but the actual first Thor movie has a better story of those two brothers, you know. That was number three. Number two is Godfather 2, part two. Again, like I prefer Godfather over Godfather part two, but when I think of like which one is the brother sort of emphasis, you know, in more, I would say Godfather Part Two. And then my number one is the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Are they really brothers?
Are there four brother turtles?
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, and now we will, for one final time, spin the wheel to see what movie you have for the daily game of name that World War II movie. So let's see what it goes. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, this is a World War II movie by Quentin Tarantino that came out in 2009.
Would that be Inglourious Basterds?
Yes, it would be.
Good movie. I think I've only seen it once.
Okay, yeah,
But
it's
I
fairly
did
good.
enjoy it.
Yeah, well, Tarantino knows how to write
Yeah.
them.
Yeah.
He knows how to keep us interested.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. You see, and finally, it wasn't something from 1958.
Right? Yep.
There you go. I'm curious if I have anything else on my list from 1970, from 1958. But I'm sure there were other World War II movies.
Yeah.
All right. Great. So, Travis, would you like to one final time tell everyone where they can find Travis Bow?
Sure. I'm always over at Real Comic Heroes and Minute of Thieves talking about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, 1 minute at a time. I've been on hiatus here recently, but there's still a good amount of episodes you can go back and listen to. And then same with Real Comic Heroes. Got a big backlog of episodes over there, and the new episodes of that will be coming out again soon.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Midnight. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, Travis, thank you very much for joining me. This has been very fun.
Thank you for having me again, as always.
Yes. Well, again, as I told you at the beginning of today's episode, as long as you behave yourself, you'll be welcome back. I have guests that don't behave themselves, and they won't be, or have not been invited back, or won't be invited
Ooh. Well, I
But
look
you
forward to
remember
finding
that.
out what project you'll be doing next, so.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
All right. So I will be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, Curry.
Karahi.